Welcome to the Creative AI Podcast with me, your host, Karan Malhotra. And over the next 1 hour, let's explore the impact of AI on all things creative. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Creative AI Podcast with me, your host, Karan Malhotra. Today we're speaking with Sharman Ali. She is the CEO and founder of InStory.com, a platform that predicts the success of content used for marketing before it's published by gauging the EQ of the content. Hey Sharman, welcome to the show.
Hi Karan, thank you.
Sweet. So EQ AI of the content is something that you'd associate with writers or marketers, but now it's being done by AI. And to date, InStoryd has over 70 brands ranging from startups to unicorns, including clients like TVS Motors and Home Capital, amongst others. They've raised two rounds of funding, first from Venture Catalysts and subsequently SOSV and Shanghai-based China Accelerator. About Sharman, she is an author, having written You, that's You Own Yourself. She's an activist. She's also a theatre personality and founder of the Arthritis Theatre Troupe. She's also formerly into enterprise B2B sales and has had to deal with many odds in bringing InStory to life between herself and her co-founder, Sutanshu Raj. So Sharman, tell us about InStory in your own words. How did the idea come into being? Where are you today? Some of the challenges you faced and where are you going?
Great. First of all, Karan, thank you so much for having me here. So to talk a little bit about what we are doing at InStory and how it began, right? So, you know, after I quit my entire sort of stint with the corporate world back in the US, way back in 2016, that's when I realized that, you know, content and writing is something that sort of just came naturally to me. So I also had the opportunity to work with a number of CXOs globally to, you know, help them build their content strategies. So one thing which I had always seen was that when it came to content marketing, there were a lot of challenges that, you know, globally content marketers face. So content marketing, the entire life cycle, it primarily comprises five stages, namely starting the first stage being, of course, conducting research on the kind of content that you want to create, to then the second stage being building a content strategy so that you can optimize your brand spend and, you know, create a good way in which you can acquire the right set of target customers that you want to target. The third stage being primarily creating the content and then editing / curating it. The fourth stage being, of course, publishing this content on multiple platforms, distributing it on multiple media. And the fifth stage is, of course, measuring what your content performance has been like, how the outreach was. So if you look at the stage five, which is essentially measuring the engagement of your content performance, there are a multitude of tools available which help you gauge this. And needless to say, the most emphasized one being, of course, Google Analytics. Now, GA, as we all know, it gives you a very quantitative summary of how your content has performed. By quantitative summary, I mean things like number of clicks, number of page visits, click-through rate, bounce rate, etc. However, none of these tools actually tell you that, let's say if your content performed badly, let's say if you did not get the number of clicks that you expected, it does not tell you why did that happen, even though you spent much money on your AdWords, SEO campaigns, etc. Now, that's exactly where the challenge lies. That, you know, people end up spending millions of dollars. So we thought that what if there were a way to measure and understand how your content is going to perform even before you've actually published it? Now, if you could predict the success rate of your content even before publishing, that would be a huge value addition, so to say, for content marketers globally.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is that we, as we all know, that consumer buying patterns, all the customer behavior is primarily driven by emotions and not by logic. So we thought, what if there were a way to gauge the emotional quotient of your content? And that's not all. What if on top of that, we could also give you smart recommendations, which are both semantically and contextually relevant, to ensure that the context in which you've written your content stays intact. However, the stickiness quotient of your content with your audiences increases exponentially. Mm-hmm. And that would be a huge value add. And that is exactly what we did at InStory. We built a smart tool using which a content marketer would be able to predict what is the emotional engagement quotient of their content and also their smart recommendation. And in order to gauge what would be the success rate of his content, what would be the outreach like even before he's actually gone and published the content. So higher the engagement, higher the stickiness, more the number of leads that you get on your content, more is the chances of your sales conversions. Hence, you end up driving more ROI. That is the cycle. That's exactly what we do at InStories. Initially, we were only in text, but then we've also forayed into videos now. So yeah, that's what I have.
Wow, that's a great sort of broad and a little bit of in-depth understanding also of the tool that you've built. And like we mentioned at the outset, you've also seen, you know, a reasonable amount of success being invested and dealing with many Fortune brand companies as well. While you were mentioning all that, you know, one thing came to mind is that a lot of what you're describing would traditionally, let's say a brand would get this kind of insight from an advertising agency, right? Because they would have a conversation with, let's say, the strategist on the agency side. Someone from servicing would be involved. The creative director might be involved. Even the copywriter themselves. There are 3-4 different people, at least on the agency side, that would be involved in terms of being able to measure or give nuanced insight into why a bit of content should not work before it's actually put out as a campaign. And a lot of that is what you're saying InStory now can potentially do. And the other thing is that in the world of AI, today you also have AI that can write scripts from scratch, think up of characters and write a book from end to end. So where do you see there being this balance for the human in the loop, right? The people in this entire cycle where AI is advancing in this direction. So what role do advertisers, copywriters play now and going forward? And what are the opportunities and, you know, what are the things that they should be worried about?
Right. So, you know, first of all, I don't think that any AI in this world will ever be able to take over the creativity of the human mind. And that is not something that we ever intend to do.
Okay.
Our intention is to essentially help enhance the entire content creation process for a brand, whether it is being used by an ad agency or by anyone who is freelancing for any brand, or whether it is by someone who is creating copy, you know, any sort of content. So the intent is to help them streamline their thoughts, you know, make the entire process more effective, more productive. How do you essentially improve your efficiency? So the challenges that, you know, we've seen, and this is something based on the fact that I've personally interviewed about 500 odd content masters globally.
Wow, okay.
who are essentially working with a bunch of guys like Omnicom, Dentsu, and WPP, all of these people. So these guys really, really know what they are doing, and the kind of creativity that they add into their content, you know, it's amazing. So of course, you know, when you are creating something which is supposed to help a content writer or a content marketer streamline his thoughts, you definitely need to interview all of the stakeholders in this entire cycle, right? So whether it be a brand, whether it be a creative agency, or whether it be a freelancer, right? I mean, all of these guys are your plausible customer segment. So, you know, you definitely have to interview all of these guys. And yes, we also did that. So what we found out is that all of these people said one thing in common, that right now the entire process of content creation is very manual, is based on my intuition. You know? So what happens is that, how do I know if my content tone is coming out to be, let's say, positive or negative, or, you know, what are the emotions like? Just to give you a little perspective, for example, if I am a content marketer with an insurance company, right? So my job is to acquire more number of customers, sell, you know, more insurances using the content marketing, whatever that I'm doing. So if you look at the underlying emotion that I'm trying to sell here, is actually fear. What if tomorrow you were to get COVID-19? You know that, let's say, ABC insurance company, which will help process all your claims fast. That's exactly why they are the most trustworthy ones in the entire pool of insurance companies. So now, when you're creating the content, being a content marketer, you tend to go haywire with your thoughts. Although there is a full editing, curating cycle, which, you know, your senior editor would be engaging in. But all of this is, again, based on intuition, is very manual. Now, in a 9-hour work day, what these content marketers who we interviewed, what they said is that, hey, a lot of my time, first of all, is just gone into conducting research. So they have to see so many different articles. They have to read up. A lot of data research goes into is understanding what are the numbers, understanding what all things have to be put in, what should be cut out. So after that, the same amount of time almost goes into creating the content. But that's not all. The most important part is to actually edit, curate the content, make it more readable. So that is where the challenge is. And so we thought that, you know, instead of having a very intuition-based manual cycle, if there was a technology, a mathematical solution which could tell you that, hey, you know, your content looks awesome, but this is the kind of tone which is coming out of your content. What is happening is that I'm actually helping this entire editorial cycle becoming much smoother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm helping them streamline their thoughts. I'm helping the entire process become more productive instead of spending, let's say, 1 hour to actually understand what is the tone, what are the emotions coming out like. What if there was a tool which could highlight all of the words which were exuding, let's say, the fear emotion?
Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's exactly what the tool does. It highlights all of those words in your content which are exuding fear. And when you hover your cursor over a particular word, then you get multiple recommendations which will essentially, upon clicking a recommendation, you see that your fear score has increased from, let's say, X to Y or decreased. So in using that, what will happen is that this is basically Grammarly for emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what will happen is that this content marketer would be able to play around with the tool, play around with the kind of recommendations that he gives. And I am just helping him enhance his thought process. Instead of replacing words himself, when he's seen this tool give him recommendations which are both semantically and contextually relevant, he knows that, okay, these are the kind of words that even I would have thought.
Mm.
So this entire cycle is way more productive. That is the intention that we have. We absolutely don't want to replace the creativity of a human mind. I think no AI, no engine can ever beat that.
So what you're saying is that it works as a partner to the writer or to the advertiser,
yes,
or to the creative
absolutely
director. And as I understand, your engine also, it tests each bit of content for a specific set of emotions. There's some sort of framework over there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I actually went to Harvard to study about neuromarketing. So where I got the opportunity to actually work with a bunch of pioneering neuromarketers. Now, what they
nice
said is that when you talk about the human brain, right, there are three layers in the human brain, as they also call it, the triune brain model, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that, the second layer, which is the emotional brain, is supposed to be the most active. It's supposed to overpower all of your logical brain, which is essentially the thinking part of your brain, or the neocortex, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So the emotional brain tends to overpower logic. So as a result of it, there are five basic emotions that we as human beings react the most to. What are these five emotions? These are joy, anger, fear, sadness, and surprise. So these are the five emotions which are also being shown by the tool that we've built.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say if you're a brand which is selling women's cosmetics, right? So what is the emotion that you're trying to spread here? Joy, surprise, let's say, with, you know, a certain segment of women, working women, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
So that is exactly what the tool will do. It'll give you the joy score and, you know, the surprise score in your content, and highlight all those words which are contributing to, you know, these two scores.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you click on a particular emotion, that is when you get, you know, the individual words and the following recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what we do. And other than this, we also give you a bunch of your metadata, your keywords which you would essentially want to put into your content,
mm-hmm,
to see how it starts trending once you've published it. So in order to ensure that your SEOs are also correct, the tool automatically runs an algorithm in the back end where it automatically compares your content with all of the similar available content globally, and it gives you dynamically responses saying that, you know, you should include these keywords in your content in order to, you know, start trending and in order to become more shareable, more viral. So all of these things.
Okay, very cool. Do you find that given the inherent emotions that your framework checks each bit of content for, have you found that there is a greater uptake of brands coming to you in the last couple of months, especially in this COVID world? Yeah, the world that we live in right now, where suddenly talking with empathy and purpose-driven content and being more conscious of what you're putting out over there and brands becoming more responsible. Do you find that this is a bigger opportunity for you at InStoRead and in general that brands just should have been doing this sooner anyway?
Actually, you know, I feel that you answered your own question. So absolutely, yes. Right now, brands have realized that their content has to be more engaging. It needs to stick with their audiences. It has to have a purpose. It cannot just be any kind of conventional forms of creating content. That needs to be, you know, gone. And right now, the content has to be more driven. And, you know, it has to be something which can stick with your audiences. So I feel that the entire situation of, you know, the whole pandemic crisis that happened, this is actually a blessing in disguise for all marketers, right? Because right now is the time when all the brands have understood that, you know, there cannot be any more brick and mortar outlets because there are no footfalls, as we all understand, right? So everything has to move online. And if you're already online, if you already have an online presence, well and good. However, if you didn't have it, now is the time to, you know, stress that even more. So as a result of that, in order to have an online presence, the most important factor for any company, for any brand, for any marketer, is to build engagement. You know, more engaging the content is essentially more the number of leads, thereby more conversions, and that is how you get, you know, more sales, more ROI. So how do you do that? The only way to do that is to, you know, create content which can really resonate with your audiences, which can really stick with them, right? And that is when you would get more number of clicks on your impression. So I think this is the best time for us. And luckily, we've actually been growing at a month-on-month rate of 60%.
Wow, okay. So,
and on a daily basis, we get about 15 to 20 fresh new leads.
Wow, very cool. So,
I think that has been a good thing for us in a way that, you know, there has been more number of
inbound
dates, than what we're getting yet.
This episode is brought to you by Outlined.co. Whether you're a brand and marketing manager, work at an agency, or a business owner, discover the power of creative process automation for marketing campaigns with Outlined.co. To know more, log on to www.outlined.co.
Because you're saying that you can have this real-time understanding of content and be able to sort of iterate, let's say if there is a particular idea around content or particular campaign idea, and then you can create something and gauge the potential effectiveness of it. Have you been part of any, say, brand creation, like a campaign creation process with the marketer and the agency? And have you seen that process itself evolve because they have access to InStoRead now?
Yes. There are actually a number of metrics which we use, you know, to understand how the effect has been after using the tool that we created. So metrics like, you know, click-through rate, bounce rate. The click-through rate for a brand with whom we've worked with has increased, and, you know, the bounce rate has practically fallen down to zero, or it's in those decimal numbers, which I think is a great, great achievement because it's very difficult to do that. So that has been the kind of response. Also, some of our customers have told us that in the last 6 months, because this is marketing, so essentially it does take time to see their results, right? What they said is that, you know, essentially the number of leads per post has increased by over 300%. They were able to drive ROI by about 1.5x in less than a quarter. And, you know, the entire lead to conversion cycle has also improved as a result, right? So that has been some of the amazing feedback that we've got by our existing customers, both brands and creative agents.
Fantastic. So basically driving impact and making that real and tangible, even before you've delivered, just line of sight on that. Also, given that you've spoken to so many marketers, now if you were to put yourself in their shoes, marketers today are getting pitched a lot of AI and machine learning driven products or supposedly driven products. Is there any advice that you can give marketers maybe? How is it that they evaluate if a piece of shiny new tech actually has this thing called machine learning or AI, and do they need to be very informed before speaking to someone who is pitching this kind of content to them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think the biggest thing to look out for when it comes to any tool that is essentially using AI, any company, right, is basically what is the value proposition that they have to offer, right? I mean, where exactly do they fall? So it can be, for example, you know, there are a variety of tools which help you create these amazing headlines. How do you know that whether your headline is something which can stick in 5 words or you should have 7 words or 3 words? So you just pull in a few ideas and then the AI tool at the back end come up with a headline which just sounds very sexy. So it is not just about creating anything, right? And how do you evaluate it is basically, first of all, what is it that you're needed, right? If it is something which is solving a genuine problem, or is it just a good to have, right? I mean, is it a good to have or a must have? I mean, is that company selling water or is it selling juice? Because I can survive without juice, but I cannot survive without water, right? So what is the kind of value add that it has? Because there are a variety of tools available. And frankly, I think most of them are just repackaging the same old things available and just selling the same thing again. So instead of reinventing the wheel, what they are doing is that they are just repositioning the same old stuff that is already available and selling the same thing again. So I think it's important to understand what is it that a particular tool has to offer. You know, what is the value proposition? Is it actually solving a real need?
Mm-hmm.
So in your words, right, is it really impact driven? What is the kind of impact that my marketing will see? Will it be able to optimize my brand spend? Will it be able to ensure that, I mean, I'm able to cut down the time that I'm investing, or am I being able to use my employees or my team for, let's say, getting more work done, any kind of productivity? But all of it has to be ROI driven, especially in the times of the pandemic that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
Every brand, every enterprise out there is extremely focused on, you know, ensuring that they save as much money as possible, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It is all about optimizing your brand spend and saving money and, you know, all about cost cutting. So I think that is something which has to be ensured while checking out any tools that are available. I mean, it need not just be with respect to content. It can be with respect to even hiring, right? I mean, there are a multitude of tools available in the HR tech space. So how do you know that which is the one that is really adding value? I think one needs to sort of dig in and understand what is the value prop that they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are selling water and not juice. So that would be a way to measure.
Okay. Nice analogy. I mean, when you're in the desert, which one, you know, one expression of what the kind of life you're experiencing right now, do you want juice or do you want water? Would make a difference. And as much as we're speaking of, you know, being cautious in some ways and also thinking of how is that you can maximize ROI and extend your runway, a lot of marketers would be thinking of this, especially given that you work with a lot of startups. At the same time, marketers also want to think of how is it that I can expand, you know, as much as it might not seem logical, but they also want to think of, okay, what are the other growth opportunities that I can look at? And one of the other areas that you offer is the same kind of analysis on vernacular content. As I understand, you're doing this for Hindi and now also expanding to Spanish. So can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I'm guessing this going foraying into Spanish, that means you're also looking at an international footprint. So if you can tell us a bit about that.
First of all, you've done a lot of research on us, which is good.
I have to be prepared, right? Because the listener has to get the value. So yeah, over to you.
Absolutely. I'm glad. So yes, initially when we started, we were just in English, you know, because as we know that English is spoken globally.
Mm-hmm.
Although yes, I mean, from a numbers perspective, I think it is the maximum spoken in India because India has the highest population.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the whole Indian culture being very English driven. So yes, we were initially only in English, but then, you know, because we are in India, because we are based out of Bangalore, we realized that since in India, as we know that the next billion users, there are currently 800 million people who communicate in Hindi, you know, and also thanks to the Prime Minister of our country, that we've seen that on Twitter, right, 12 out of 15 tweets are right now happening in Hindi.
Wow.
So as a result of that, it actually makes sense to have a tool which can help you understand how engaging, how readable your content is in Hindi. Now, although it sounds very fascinating, very exciting, but as we all know that AI is no magic, it's all about the data that you feed into your algorithm and the subsequent results that you get.
Yeah, so it's all code,
Yes. All of the efficacy of your AI engine is basically based on the data that you train your algorithm with. So the challenge here was that English, there is a lot of material available, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scraping the internet and, you know, then tagging the data to a bunch of tones, emotions. Doing that was easy because we all really understand, and you know, English is very, very easily available. There's too much of work that has happened, research work. Unfortunately, in Hindi, you know, we actually feel proud about the fact that India has 800 million people communicating in Hindi. The challenge is that there is not much work that has been done in Hindi. There is hardly any research that has gone into understanding the Hindi language. Now, Hindi as a language is extremely rich because it comes from Sanskrit, which in itself is also one of the oldest languages globally.
Mm-hmm.
So Hindi as a language is much richer than English, much more complex. So what we have to do is that the entire thing that we did with the Hindi was again done from the scratch. A lot of research had to go in-house. We didn't have any of those data sets available which were already tagged. So all the data that we did in Hindi, so we've used a number of data sources and I can announce it. So things like movie reviews, things like articles written in Hindi, all of the journalism that was done in Hindi, then a number of authors and their books that were written in Hindi. So we scraped all of that, and then what we did was we tagged all these data sets to a bunch of emotions and the tones that we are showing. And after a 6-month hard work, we were able to launch India's first Hindi readability analyzer, which will tell you how comprehensive or how readable your content is depending on a particular age group. So you have all of these features available that will tell you what are the tones being highlighted from your content, positive, negative, neutral, in a graphical format. And it will tell you which are the sentences which are very hard to read, sentences which are easy to read. So something like a Hemingway in Hindi, you know, I mean, if you in English,
yep.
Same thing has been used in Hindi. And I'm also happy to tell you that as of last month, we've launched also the spell checker in Hindi.
Yes. Oh, very cool. Okay.
So, yes. So I think the team has been able to do that. And now in the next few days, actually, as we speak, new feature that's being added is to evaluate Hindi grammar. Because the plan that we had was to, you know, build Grammarly, which is in English, in Hindi.
Okay.
Now, Hindi grammar, as they say in Vyakaran, is actually extremely complex.
Yeah.
And that is what has taken a long time. So we are about to launch the Hindi grammar checker also. That is from a Hindi perspective, and we want to have a Twitter extension so that when you are writing content on Twitter, you're able to see that, you know, these are the kind of responses. This is where your readability stands. And we've also partnered with a number of content platforms. Like, for example, I'm sure you heard of Matru Bharati.
Mm-hmm.
Matru Bharati has 1 million+ readers, all of their content. So Matru Bharati writers are right now using Hindi tool that we've built. So using the Hindi APIs that we provided, they would be able to see, you know, what their readability is like. We are also about to partner with another company, which is creating a lot of vernacular news that should be done in the following week. Suppose that, you know, Hindi would be an important language for us. Yes, in the future, we are looking at expanding into Spanish also. The good thing about Spanish is that, you know, there is a lot of work that has been done in Spanish. Spanish as a language, there is a lot of research paper which is available. So that sort of makes it easy for our NLP team and the data scientists in-house to actually create a data set which has already been verified and then tag the emotion. So Spanish is something that, yes, we are looking at in the future, because as we know that if you look at the number of countries that speak Spanish, right, it is one of the highest in the world. So yes, Spanish is the next step for us.
Very cool. And kudos to you and the team, given the kind of work that you're doing is obviously going to have impact at scale, right? So it's very, very cool to see. I don't know if you're already thinking of this, but given that you have access to, or you're working with all these data sets, do you see it as being a possibility where further down the road, in a few quarters and a few years, your framework might even be able to write content from scratch? I'm just trying to understand from a reverse engineering point of view, right? If you're gauging sentiment and key triggers and intent, if someone puts in a couple of adjectives and a few nouns and pronouns, would your engine then be able to create the content from that? Because I know that that kind of thing already exists with script writing and book writing, but is that something that you're thinking of?
So, yes. from a vision perspective, that is something which is there in our mind, which would be lovely to implement, because once you've created the content using the engine, the next step is to evaluate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it just falls in place. You know, I mean, we already have an evaluation recommendation engine. The next step is to basically get something to create content. So yes, there are a few tools available. You know, you've heard that, okay, the next episode of Game of Thrones was written by this bot. So there are a few of those tools available. So we would, however, not go in the fiction space.
Mm-hmm.
Our focus has always been to, you know, essentially create better content for brands or enterprises. So what we do is that, for example, to give you a taste of what we intend to do,
mm-hmm.
is that, let's say, if I want to understand about what were the global trends in retail during COVID-19.
Yes, yeah.
So I would, let's say, feed in a few keywords into, you know, my algorithm, things like retail, 2020, COVID-19, some of these keywords, and then select, let's say, if I want to create only 500 words, select the number of words that I want, and then, you know, the tool should be able to automatically come up with something like a blog.
Mm-hmm.
500
mm-hmm.
word blog.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what we intend to do. Yes, we do have that in our mind. And the challenge is that right now we're a very small member team.
Yeah.
So in the future, yes, we would be willing to create something like that. However, our focus will always be on the marketing front. We will not be, let's say, helping you understand, hey, is Game of Thrones coming back?
I'm sure everyone would. You just break the internet if that happened.
I wish, but no, we don't intend to go there.
We'd also like to thank Transistor.fm. Create unlimited podcasts for one monthly price. Invite team members, see your podcast stats, and distribute to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Transistor.fm also offer private podcasting for your company or membership site.
You're just sort of switching track, because in terms of, again, with this broader theme of expanding and looking at new frontiers, I know that you're also looking at video content through mm-hmm. computer vision and audio analysis. So is that something that you already have ready, or is that something mm-hmm. that's in the pipeline to be launched, etc.? Can you maybe something about that?
Yes. So we've already launched the POC, and we intend to launch the final product. Hopefully by March 21 is when we are hoping to, you know, launch the final product.
Okay.
So videos, the use case here would be any brand, right? Like, for example, Zara, let's say, you know, it's a traditional way to create videos and to understand your video marketing was to approach an agency, of course, which would, you know, create your videos. And then, you know, once the video has been created, so what they would do is that they would hire a focus group of people to understand what do these people feel after watching the video, right? Is it a positive one? Is it a negative one? Were they feeling, you know, angry? Were they scared? What were the emotions like? So the one video which gets the best responses as expected by the brand was the one, you know, which would just be floated around and published on your marketing platform.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you look at the entire process, right, it's extremely manual. It's, you know, again, not that effective, right? I mean, because when you're watching a video, if there were a way to record your responses at that point of time and then see it on a dashboard, cumulatively, this is what, you know, the entire focus group thought of.
Mm-hmm.
That would be much better, instead of, you know, let them watch it first and then sit down with them and have like a tabular format and then, okay. Instead of doing it the traditional way, what we thought was that why not have a tool using which customer responses, real-time consumer responses, would be recorded using just a webcam on a dashboard which we would build.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, a millisecond by millisecond response of the customer's, you know, face and his eye movements, right? As in what he or she feels when they're watching the video.
Mm-hmm.
If you could record that, and you've already set a benchmark, if all these responses, the video that gets the best responses is the one that will be floated around. So using consumer video responses on a dashboard, which can gauge the video that would get the best response after you've published it,
mm-hmm.
this would be extremely effective and extremely efficient for a brand, right? Because then they would know that on a millisecond by millisecond basis, right? So let's say all of those cuts that you would want to make in your trailer, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would know that, okay, this particular second in the trailer got a very positive response. Mm-hmm. And this particular second lost the attention of the consumer completely, you mm-hmm. know, because mm-hmm. they were like, okay, this is not that great. So we were also telling what was the attention level like mm-hmm. and which part of the video, gauging through eye movement, that which part of the video got the maximum responses. Now imagine, for someone who's actually created the video, edited it, right? For the cinematographer to say, it would be a huge value addition. They would know where to make those cuts. Mm-hmm. They would know how to portray the story. They would know what should be the trailer like. They would also know that, okay, this particular video is the one getting the best responses, getting the emotion that I would essentially want to capture within my audiences when they watch it. Now, be it either for a Netflix trailer, for an Amazon Prime trailer, or for a TV advertisement for any brand, right? Mm-hmm. You can essentially get all of these responses from your focus group in a much more effective, efficient way. Mm-hmm. So that is what we intend to do, to help a particular company or brand optimize their brand spend and be sure that, okay, which video is the one that should be floated around. That is the intention. We've already launched a POC. We should be able to launch the final product by this year end, financial year end.
Fantastic. So ladies and gents, you will know that when InStory eventually becomes a unicorn, this is one of the early recordings that you heard.
Wow, thank you.
So it also got me thinking that wouldn't market researchers or market research companies also be able to leverage this particular feature for their work?
Yes, in a way, yes. It depends on what are they researching on, basically. Because when you look at this, right, we work in a few formats. We work with text and we work with, of course, now into videos also. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what they are researching about primarily, right? So actually, if you remember the five stages that I mentioned, right?
Yeah.
We essentially come into stage three where, you know, you're creating content and then editing, curating it before publishing. So stage three is the primary stage for us actually.
Okay. No, I was just thinking out loud because I would imagine if you can do this kind of analysis specific to video or content, I would imagine even for stuff that's already been put out there, but just there's vast amounts of content. And something like a Nielsen or any other market research firm sees value in this, they could definitely leverage this tool.
Absolutely. Yeah. We do intend to partner with Nielsen, though.
Nice.
Nielsen, if you're listening.
Exactly. I feel like an oracle, you know. I'm just like sort of pulling things out of the air. And they seem to be confirming them. Yes. So, very cool, very cool. So, as we sort of wind down the conversation over here, Shamin, now, we've covered a variety of different, very engaging insights about what your product does and therefore what opportunities it creates, both for brand marketers, for agencies, startups, etc. And you do this both for English content, vernacular content, and we've spoken about video also, right? And as I understand, your focus market is primarily, say, the B2B space. Right? But then there might be a lot of, say, writers, marketers who might not, you know, come to InStory, but they're interested in and intrigued about starting off in this journey somewhere. So any experiments or any other sort of free tools that you would suggest that they can check out, just broadly in terms of, you know, how is it that they can navigate this terrain, and also given the fact that it's an uncertain market right now for many of them.
Right. So we intend to launch the Chrome extension ourselves, you know. So
very cool. Yeah. I'm signing up for that.
We'll be able to use it.
Fantastic. So that answers that question. Fantastic. I mean, this has been such a fun conversation, Shamin. Thank you. And, you know, as we get to the end of this episode, we do have a couple of quick questions. What would be the rapid
fire?
Should
I break myself?
Yeah. So if you're ready, I'm going to jump straight into it. So first thing, a book that you'd recommend for people to maybe understand this space a little bit better, you know, about automation or design or like writing or exponential tech, any particular reading that you'd recommend?
There's a huge amount of material available online, frankly. Textbooks using which you can understand AI and content marketing much better. However, I would recommend there's this one book called Life 3.0. Mm-hmm. It was written by a person called Max Tegmark, if I'm not wrong. Mm-hmm. I read this way back in 2017, if I'm not wrong. Yeah. So the book is something which, according to me, is actually amazing. It discusses about what will be the impact of AI on future of life and Earth and beyond, you know, so things like that. So I think that is extremely important, because you should know that AI is not something which is supposed to take over the human mind.
Hmm.
No, that won't happen ever. But then where is the bridge, and how AI can really enhance the human mind and the entire thinking and make it more efficient? So I think this is a beautiful book written by this person. So you should read it.
Fantastic. And you should know that this is the second conversation that I'm having with a female entrepreneur on this podcast who made this exact same recommendation.
Are you serious?
I'm not even kidding. So to you and to our listeners, the other conversation that we had was with Katia Forbes, who is the MD of Australia and New Zealand for Designit. Designit is a global strategic design firm, and she does some very, very cool work in the AI and design space. And this is the exact, Life 3.0 is the exact book that she recommended.
Go read Life 3.0.
Yes, go for it, go for it. Next question. Who are your personal inspirations and why?
Oh, Steve Jobs.
Wow, why?
Sadly, couldn't meet him, but yeah. I mean, what a phenomenal mind, right? I think the best speech of the last decade was his Stanford speech.
Mm-hmm.
I have that saved on my list of favorites, you know, whenever I'm low, whenever...
You could watch that. Those
days, yeah. Okay. I just play that and I listen to the voice. And I'm like, wow. This man really knew what to do, you know, I mean, how to connect the dots. Ultimately, if you see in life, everything is about, you know, storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. How do you connect the dots, the kind of perspectives that you have, love and loss is all a part of life. So I think the best thing about the man was, of course, the passion that he showed, right? 1,000 songs in your pocket, iPod, right? Amazing. Just look at the kind of positioning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest learning from this man was that do not ever sell a feature, sell the idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about the kind of magic that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about understanding the human mind, understanding the psychology behind the human mind. You know? So if you're able to connect on that level,
mm-hmm.
that is when you know that, okay, your product is sold. You don't have to sell features. You have to sell the kind of impact that this feature can create. So, you know, mm-hmm. you've seen iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All the iPhone advertisements are all about, wow, what a picture. Look at that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, all those huge billboards have
yeah.
these beautiful pictures, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that is what they're selling, that, hey, you need to buy an iPhone to get more Instagram followers. Why? Because look at this.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. So it's not about selling the product or selling a feature. It's about selling the idea, you know, the kind of impact that this thought can essentially create. You know, it's all about emotions. The man was a marketing genius. So he is my guru.
Fantastic. At this uncertain time, one thing that keeps you grounded?
Great question. No, I don't take pride in saying this, but we had to unfortunately let go of, you know, two people within our company,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
because of the entire situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thousands have been
laid off, yeah.
Like Uber, yeah. Thousands have been laid off globally. So that is something which really, really hurts me, because I never wanted to do that. But considering the situation that we are in, we obviously had to plan ahead. Mm. Right now, I guess the situation is much better, but then I ensured that these people got jobs in, you know, other companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something which I don't feel very proud of saying that, but that is something which I think of a lot. That, okay, these were the first few employees in my company, you know, and I have to let go of two of them. So I try to keep myself calm and ensure that there will be a day, there'll be a time when I'll get them back on board.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing is constant, right? So
yeah.
We just need to wait for a few more months when the situation improves, and let's say when travel resumes, and the world economy sees a much better growth curve as compared to what it is right now. So, yeah, I think the entire thought of what really keeps me grounded is the fact that change is the only constant, right? We need to be extra cautious and extra careful of that anything can happen anytime. So I think you need to be calm, grounded, and ensure that you're spending money in the right direction. So, yeah, these few things keep me grounded.
Okay. Looking ahead, what are you hopeful for?
For me, as an entrepreneur, the biggest thing is impact. First thing that I'm hopeful for is that people are able to accept the kind of change that we are about to bring. I mean, I am never ever talking about taking over the human mind. I can never ever replace that using any AI product. Mm-hmm. It is all about, you know, getting the right sort of enhancements. It is about helping you make your entire content cycle more productive, more efficient. Right now, we are very, very focused on just brands, on just enterprises. You know? I'm hopeful that someday we will also be able to go B2C. Yeah, because I have always had this thought and always had this plan that someday we should be able to go B2C space.
Okay.
So that is one thing that I'm very hopeful for. Yes.
So great. Thank you so much, Sharmin. It was great chatting with you. If someone has to get in touch with you and follow you online, how can they do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, very easy. Just type my name on Google. You should be able to get to me very easily. On a more serious note, I think LinkedIn is the best way to reach out to me.
Okay.
Because I am always, always available on LinkedIn. Otherwise, yes, I do have, there is Facebook, there's Instagram, there's Twitter, or there is directly, you know, you can reach out to me on hello@instohit.com.
Okay.
That is another way to reach out to me. Yeah. But very easy to, you know, find me online.
Fantastic. And to bring the end of another great conversation as part of our series, thank you, Sharmin, for taking the time. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, Karan. Same here. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in. And if you have feedback to share or know anyone else who you feel should be featured on this podcast, drop me a line on karan@outline.co. Till the next time, with gratitude.